North American Tools' Jim Hoyt has two openings right now at his Northwest Illinois facility. But he often sees the same problem crop up during the application process.
I'll write a few numbers down, mostly numbers with decimal points because that's what we use in manufacturing, and have them add them or subtract them or divide by two.
And often, they can't do it. Having basic math knowledge, especially of decimals, is important because of the precise inputs modern machines need. Like most manufacturers, North American uses CNC, computerized numerical control equipment. CNC machines make everything from the cutting tool parts that North American produces to automotive or medical equipment. But these machines still require plenty of manual calculations. And if you're off, even by a fraction,
it's going to crash.
Hoyt says a CNC crash usually happens because of a number that's typed in wrong or calculated incorrectly.
I'll hear a wreck in my office and pretty much the whole shop will get quiet and it's like, uh-oh, somebody's done something wrong.
That something wrong can cost his company tens of thousands of dollars in fixing the machine and lost productivity.
The 6 inches is the x-axis shift.
This is where people go to learn to operate CNC machines, a class at Richard J. Daley College on Chicago's South Side. CNC machines are expensive, and these days many employers don't want to teach the basics. So students are turning to vocational programs. Ray Prendergast heads the college's manufacturing programs. He says algebra and basic trigonometry are now prerequisites. While the college admissions testing measures entry-level proficiency, say an English 101 level, Prendergast says,
certainly the majority of students who come into my program are not at English 101, and they're not at Math 118.
So Daley College is now offering remedial education for manufacturing. These bridge programs have become especially popular in the Midwest, where many who offer CNC or welding courses see students who just aren't ready to move forward. And these courses aren't just offered by colleges. In Chicago, instructor Gabe Lopez is teaching math at the nonprofit Jane Addams Resource Corporation, one of the city's first bridge programs.
One place is tenths, two places is hundreds, three places is thousands, and so on up to millions.
One of Lopez's former students, Bernard Patton, has graduated to a welding class. He says his bridge instruction was essential for teaching him the calculations he has to do.
Be able to read the vernier caliper. It's the instrument, and it reads like to 100 thousandths of an inch because you're measuring parts. And some of these parts are so small, and if you don't know what 10 thousandths of an inch is, just take like a strand of your hair. And that's like close to 20 or 30 thousandths of an inch. You know what I'm saying? It's very, very small.
He hopes to go into welding and start his own business. Patton wants to become part of the newest generation of manufacturing workers, not just because it's a stable career, but because it's a business opportunity he can pass on to his two sons. For NPR News, I'm Nyla Boodoo in Chicago.
Right now at the Lincoln Center Festival in New York, a much-performed Shakespeare tragedy is getting a very creative reinterpretation. Tony Award winner Alan Cumming stars as Macbeth and Lady Macbeth and nearly everyone else in what's known as the Scottish play. Jeff London reports.
The lights come up on a large hospital ward, its institutional green tiles slightly mildewed around the edges. An ominous white noise hums underneath. Seated on a metal table, a clearly disturbed man is being examined by a doctor. He takes off his slightly bloody street clothes and changes into drab hospital pajamas. As the man desperately clutches a paper bag, an orderly takes him to a bed. And as the orderly and doctor are about to leave the room, the man finally speaks.
When shall we three meet again? In thunder, lightning, or in rain?
And for the next hour and a half, this mental patient performs his own feverish and highly personal version of Shakespeare's tragedy about ambition, power, and madness. This experimental tour de force for actor Alan Cumming is co-directed by John Tiffany.
He's fearless and he is mercurial and he is incredibly generous to the audience, incredibly generous as a collaborator, and he's just really good.
Is this a dagger which I see before me, the handle toward my hand? Come, let me clutch thee. I have thee not, and yet I see thee still. Art thou not fatal vision, sensible to feeling as to sight, or art thou but a dagger of the mind, a false creation proceeding from the heat-oppressed brain? I see thee yet.
Macbeth is about a warrior who meets three witches. They prophesy that he will become king of Scotland, and he and his wife take matters into their own bloody hands, killing the king, Duncan. For the Scottish-born Cumming, Macbeth has been something of an obsession since he first encountered the play when he was just in grade school.
All the names of where it takes place are places in Scotland that I knew and was familiar with. So that was really, you know, an intriguing initial thing. And then just the kind of the sheer sort of soap opera kind of qualities of it. When I was eight, that really fascinated me.
Cumming made his professional debut as Malcolm in a production of Macbeth in Glasgow when he was 22. He says he's been circling the play ever since. And a couple of years ago when the National Theatre of Scotland asked him if there was any role he was interested in doing, he thought of two.
I thought, you know what, I'd like to do Macbeth. But I wanted to do it. Initially, I wanted to do it where I would play Macbeth one night and Lady Macbeth the next night, and the actress playing Lady Macbeth would play Macbeth.
So Cumming arranged a reading with a company of actors directed by John Tiffany, where he played Macbeth in the first half and Lady Macbeth in the second half. Afterwards, they thought it kind of worked, but Tiffany felt the play lost steam when Cumming wasn't performing. Then a friend of Tiffany's, director Andrew Goldberg, made a suggestion.
So that's when I mentioned to John that I thought Alan would be an incredible person to take on the task of a one-man Macbeth set in a psychiatric ward.
The two directors in Cumming rehearsed for 6 weeks, figuring out how to merge the story of a mental patient, who they all call Fred, with Shakespeare's play, says John Tiffany.
The two stories, the details of what's happened to Fred and the story of Macbeth start to kind of elide, really, and then you get a sense, I suppose, that he's almost trying to channel this play and these characters and this language as some attempt to purge or cleanse something that he has experienced.
Andrew Goldberg says they were very influenced by an essay Sigmund Freud wrote about Macbeth.
Freud's analysis of the Macbeths is that really that Macbeth and Lady Macbeth are two halves of the same person, that together they make up a complete psyche.
Alan Cumming.
He's the lord and the warrior, and yet she displays very masculine attributes. Once they have made the pact of doing this thing, she becomes the guy, and yet she uses very womanly wiles.
So Cumming gets to play both halves together, like in this scene before Macbeth kills the king.
How now, what news? He has almost supped. Why have you left the chamber? Have he asked for me? No, you naughty ass. We will proceed no further in this business. He hath honored me of late, and I have bought golden opinions from all sorts of people, which will be worn now in their newest gloss, not cast aside so soon. Was the hope drunk wherein you dressed yourself? Hath it slept since? And wakes it now to look so green and pale at what it did so freely?
As the play hurtles towards its tragic conclusion, a deeper picture of Fred, the mental patient, emerges, says Cumming.
The narrative of Fred and the actual narrative of the Macbeths and everyone come towards each other and connect. There's one scene when you think, oh, wow, I see. And then it fuses.
Right before Macbeth's most famous soliloquy.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death.
Cumming says that none of the collaborators realized how traumatic and exhausting it would be to perform this mostly one-man version of the play.
There are two other people in the show who come on and sedate me and do things, and it's actually lovely when they come on because it's like, oh, somebody else on the stage. And also they usually kind of give me an injection and I get to lie down for 30 seconds. So that's quite good. And, you know, wipe the snot from my face.
Macbeth will be performed at the Rose Theatre through Saturday. For NPR News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting you to experience sustainable specials and everyday indulgences at Intermezzo Cafe. More information about upcoming events is at KrannertCenter.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, It's the 10th of July, 2012. It was 50 years ago today, 1962, the world's first commercial communications satellite was launched, Telstar 1, about 3 feet in diameter, with an array of square solar panels over the surface. It's the birthday of Marcel Proust, born in Auteuil, France, in 1871. His major work, the 7-volume Remembrance of Things Past, known now as In Search of Lost Time. Proust's own life story, with the famous scene early on in the book when the narrator dips a bit of a madeleine, little cake, in some tea, and it carries the memory of his childhood. Proust wrote, "No sooner had the warm liquid mixed with the crumbs touched my palate than a shudder ran through me and I stopped, intent upon the extraordinary thing that was happening to me. An exquisite pleasure had invaded my senses, something isolated, detached, with no suggestion of its origin. It had on me the effect which love has of filling me with a precious essence. I had ceased now to feel mediocre, contingent, mortal. Whence could it have come to me, this all-powerful joy? And suddenly the memory revealed itself. The taste was that of the little piece of madeleine which on Sunday mornings at Cambrai, when I went to say good morning to her in her bedroom, my Aunt Leonie used to give me, dipping it first in her own cup of tea. The sight of the little madeleine had recalled nothing to my mind before I tasted it, and all from my cup of tea." Which all really happened to Proust, although in his case it was a humbler food than a madeleine. It was a piece of rusk, toast. He began the novel in June 1909, produced the first volume, Swan's Way, in 1913, spent the next decade working on the rest, and he was proofreading the final three unfinished volumes on his deathbed in 1922. It's the birthday of John Calvin, born in Picardy, France, 1509, who experienced a religious epiphany sometime in his early 20s. He embraced Protestantism when that was a dangerous thing to do in France, and he took to the road through France and Italy and Switzerland, finally settling in Geneva. And in 1536, he published his Institutes of the Christian Religion, laying out the foundations that we've come to know as Calvinism. Total depravity, all people born sinful, unconditional election, that God has chosen those